gives us a good overview of where we view from a national standpoint, and also the great historical view of where we're going, or what we've done in the past, and what services have been put in there. Bill?
I think you wanted me to point out that we'll make Tom's presentation available on the website after he's made that couple of corrections that he wanted to bring before he started this morning. I'm going to go back briefly to the document, page 10 of the document that I handed out. I'm going to skim because I looked at the clock, and we kind of timed our presentations yesterday to try to get them done in a certain amount of time. On this one, I'm just going to point out that I made some observations on pages 10 through 14, approximately, about the article that we put out to you, the characteristics of the state local system, in different categories that the authors listed, tax fairness. I spent some time on that, looking at what would be called tax burden and incidence questions, and how we respond to those, and how we may differ from what the author's perspective was. On page 12, state fiscal equalization. Tom mentioned this briefly, but there's a point on the top of page 12 I want to emphasize. One of the things that the authors pointed out is that you have a relationship with your local governments, and it changes by how much money that you give them, or whether you do other things to change property tax burdens for local governments that are financed by the property tax. At the top of page 12, and I got this number from Tom, and we thought this was important to emphasize. The other way that you address your relationship on taxes and spending and local and state relationships is by, from time to time, taking over programs. We shifted the state, the share of Medicaid that was used to be paid by the counties to the state in the early 1980s. Tom, early to mid-80s in our increments. And today, that would represent, if they were still paying their share, they used to pay a share, their share would be $350 million today. So there are significant changes that take place outside the tax system and inside the spending system that affect how much use there has to be of the tax at the local level. That's another one besides the state aid relationship transfer function. We've done a couple other things like that, but they've had a much smaller scale. But I wanted to make note of that. The authors made a couple of points that are really important. One, under political accountability, they talk about taxpayer transparency and openness in government, and they mention a procedure that ought to be used in the property tax, where a local government that's setting a new property tax rate is required to identify the increase in value and the change in their tax request and show what the increase in value would generate given a frozen tax request, what rate it would generate. We implemented that law in the early 1990s, I think about 95, and it's on the books, and that's what's on page 12. I've been asked about that several times, and I've actually attended one of these required hearings on this, and I'm pretty sure that I was the only citizen non-employed by the local government who attended the hearing that I was at, but that we have this requirement in state law. I wanted you to know that because the authors mentioned it. Finally, and their big point, and this is one that I really ask you to focus on as you read or reread this article, they recommended that income tax brackets be indexed to avoid what we call bracket creep, and this relates to how fast income tax is able to grow relative to the economy. It's a really important point to think about and focus on. What I noted in my document is that we index the standard deduction and personal exemption credits. We do not index our brackets. And when you hear Mary Jane's presentation on the income tax, you'll understand a little bit more of what we mean by that and what its significance is. Finally, on property tax equity, they were very, very cognizant of the fact that in order to deliver a fair and uniform property tax burden to owners of property, you need to be doing really good work on statistics. I cited our statistical standards and mentioned how we do that in Nebraska. That was severely criticized in the Syracuse tax study, but I think that we've improved our local practice significantly since the Syracuse tax study was done. And on the last page, page 14, they listed seven characteristics of an uncompetitive interstate tax climate. I made note of them. And then I made note of where I believe Nebraska stands relative to those characteristics. They include tax burden, progressive tax policies, property tax inventory exemption for business, sales tax exemption for industrial machinery. I noted below that agricultural machinery. And I made note of when we had adopted those policies and what those policies were. They mentioned a classified property tax. I don't know how much time I'll have to talk about this later, but in a lot of states, it's pretty common to have agricultural land assessed and valued at a percentage of the market value that is much lower than residential or commercial. Our neighbor state of Kansas is noteworthy for that. And that, in effect, shifts property tax burden to the owners of the property that has the highest percentage of relationship to market value. And finally, above average rates for unemployment insurance, workers' comp. My understanding, based on checking the other staff people who actually know this, is that our rates are competitive or low. So I wanted to skim that a bit because I was looking at the clock, and now it's time on the agenda for Mary Jane to walk through here and cut that.
Thank you, Bill. Welcome, Mary Jane.
So I'll try to stay upbeat and chipper and cheery and move along at a fairly good pace. But if, you know, I know Senator Hadley has asked that we not have a lot of questioning, but if there's something that catches you and you really don't understand it, you're going to back up and explain it a second time, please let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to move through this at a fairly smart pace. I also wanted to just clarify with regard to the handouts, which are coming out right now, my PowerPoint slides. We did not have enough copies for everyone in the room because we simply had no way to anticipate the number of copies that we would need. So to the extent that there are extra copies, I have distributed them to senators who are here in the audience and to members of the media for purposes of writing their stories. So I apologize to others in the room who aren't getting a copy until later on this afternoon. So first I'm going to start you off with Nebraska's individual income tax because it is, after all, our biggest tax that we currently collect the most income from. And you can't talk about taxes without getting into a little bit of history first, and Professor Hadley would think me remiss if I didn't give a little bit of history. And while I talk about the history very briefly, then I want you to be able to start thinking in terms of base. And Bill brought this up earlier, and we're going to hammer on that. Base times rate, whether it's income tax, property tax, sales tax, whatever it is. The base is where you start, because at the end of the day, your taxable base is what you apply your tax to. And so we need to understand where the base comes from, who makes decisions that affect that base. Because of our income tax structure, both corporate and individual in Nebraska, we don't control our base 100%. We control it more than we used to, but we are still beholden to federal level decisions because we tie in directly to adjusted gross income on the individual side and federal taxable income on the corporate side. So that being said, back in 1968 was when Nebraska first implemented its individual and corporate income taxes. Back then, it was very, very simple. You did your federal return. If you owed $1,000 to the feds, you took 19% of that amount and you turned that over to the state. That was it. It was very simple. It was easy for taxpayers to comply with. It was easy for the state to administer and to enforce. When you look at your document on principles and characteristics of a state tax system, you'll see things like ease of administration, simplicity, equity, sufficiency, sustainability, all of those terms. You don't need to think of them all at the same time, but as we go through this process with the committee, think about, okay, we want to make this really simple and easy for taxpayers to comply. And that's great because the simpler it is, the easier it is to comply. comply, and the better your compliance level will be. But you're also sacrificing certain things in exchange for simplicity. First and foremost, you sacrifice equity, because there's no way to make a tax system fair if it's really, really simple. Because that means there's no exemptions, no exclusions, no nothing for nobody. It's just, almost a flat rate kind of system. You're also, like I talked about with the federal determinations of being tied to the federal government to a certain extent, you lose that control over your own base to a certain extent. You lose sustainability with regard to your tax, being able to sustain the level of spending that you want to be committed to. And you lose the sufficiency, which is a lot like sustainability. So there's always trade-offs. That's my point, is there's always trade-offs. To make something easy, you may give up equity, sustainability, to make it more equitable, more fair, to better distribute the burden, it becomes more complex. You have more administrative burdens, and the compliance level tends to go down, the more complex something is. So back in 68, Nebraska was just a straight out percentage of federal liability. Our big change came in 1987, LB 773, where we decoupled, quote unquote, from the percentage of federal liability. Now the reason we did that was, as Bill alluded to earlier, the Tax Reform Act at the federal level, the Tax Reform Act of 1986. The feds were making significant changes as to what went into the base, exclusions, deductions, exemptions, those sort of things. And Nebraska stood to lose a significant amount of revenue if we stayed tied to the federal base and didn't raise that rate. So we decoupled from a percentage of your federal liability, and we recoupled to your federal adjusted gross income, AGI. That's where we start. That gives us, as a state, gives you, as senators, control over what we refer to as below-the-line adjustments. And that means below the line on the federal return where you can calculate the federal AGI on the 1040, that's line 37. Gives us control on below the line adjustments, but we still don't have control over the above the line adjustments unless we start going down the complex road of decoupling from specific federal provisions. Nebraska is one of 30 states plus the District of Columbia that uses federal AGI as a starting point, so we're pretty much in the big group. So since we started with federal definitions, we need to go to the very beginning and what goes into gross income. And it's the usual things you would think of: wages, salaries, taxable interest, ordinary dividends, alimony, business income or loss. Capital gain goes in here as well as capital loss, even though capital gains are taxed at a preferential or reduced rate by the feds. IRA distributions, rental real estate royalties, partnerships, sometimes S-corps. Trust, et cetera, farm income, employment comp, the portion of Social Security income that is taxable at the federal level, that's either 50% or 15% depending on your income level, as to whether or not it's 50% taxable or only 85% taxable, and then various other forms of income. That gets you to your federal gross income. Okay, we're not to AGI yet, we're still the gross income. Then there are three ways that you can start chipping away at that base, okay? The first way you chip away at the gross base is by excluding things right off the top that don't even go in to gross income. The other way you can do it is by allowing deductions or exemptions that reduce your taxable income. And then finally, once you get down to your tax liability, you have credits that you can utilize to offset liability. So there are distinctions. We use the terms exclusions, deductions, and credits, and there are very important distinctions as to where they apply in the process. Do they automatically reduce the base by not going in to begin with? Do they reduce the base, the gross base, once it's been calculated? And then are there credits that offset your liability? So what's excluded? We went over the usual things that you would expect to see included in gross income. What gets excluded at the federal level? Single largest federal individual income tax expenditure is employer-sponsored health insurance. Congressional Budget Office estimate for 2013 says that's $248 billion, or 1.5% of GDP in the United States. Big number. Net pension contributions and earnings, 937, capital gains, assets transferred at death, and a percentage of Social Security and retirement that excluded from taxation at the federal level. Those few items alone right there add up to $461 billion that comes out just from those. Those are exclusions from gross income. Now we have reductions of gross income at the federal level. And you can see some of the numbers in there from the CBO 2013 expenditure estimates as well. Health savings account deductions, $1.88 billion. I won't read all of these to you. You can look through them. IRA deduction, $12.84 billion. Self-employed, those are self-employed retirement plans, $15 billion. Student loan interest deductions, that's going to get a lot higher. The rate doesn't come back down. But tuition fees and some of the old domestic production activities. That only gets you to federal adjusted gross income, which of course is the starting point for Nebraska. So in Nebraska, who has to file? You can see that up there on the screen. If you're a Nebraska resident, you have to file a return unless you had no federal liability and didn't have to file a federal return and you don't have $5,000 or more of Nebraska adjustments to AGI, such as non-Nebraska state or local bond interest. Non-residents also have to file here. Essentially, if you have income derived from or connected with Nebraska sources, and there's a whole lot of case law and statutes and regulations out there about what is derived from or connected with Nebraska sources. You have your definition of who is a resident, who is a non-resident, who is partially a resident. Then you get to the Nebraska return. At the federal level, it's the 1040. In Nebraska, you add an N to the end of it, so it's the 1040N. You start on line 5 with your federal AGI from your federal return, and you put that in there. And then you have the option of deducting either the Nebraska standard deduction, which is a set dollar amount, and that gets adjusted, that is, as Bill said, indexed every year. Or you can deduct all of your federal itemized deductions. Whichever of those two amounts is greater is the one that you get to deduct from federal AGI. To the extent that you deducted state and local taxes on your federal return, you add them back, and that gives you your Nebraska income before Nebraska adjustments. We have a few Nebraska adjustments that actually increase your AGI. As you can see there, interest from state and local obligations, I should have a bullet in front of it, financial institutions tax credit, a couple of other adjustments there. And then these are the adjustments that decrease AGI. So we just have a few that increase it, and now you get to your deductions, the things that reduce the amount of taxable income. A lot of these things, some of these things in here are exempt by federal law. We are prohibited by federal law from taxing U.S. government obligations and federally taxable Tier 1, Tier 2 railroad retirement benefits. You have Nebraska's special capital gains, dividends exclusion, college savings, long-term care savings, and other adjustments brings you to Nebraska taxable income before credits. Okay? So now there are two types of credits that you can utilize to offset your liability here. There are non-refundable credits, and a non-refundable credit may be utilized to reduce your liability down to zero, but not below zero. Because it's non-refundable, you can't go more than zero. It's carryover, you may be able to carry over to the next year. Refundable credits, of course, can reduce your liability to zero, and the excess is then refunded. So we start with our non-refundable credits. You can see all of those there. Credit for tax paid to another state is primarily going to be business owners, S corporations, LLCs, LLPs, those types of entities where the business is doing, has activities in more than one state. And so the partners or shareholders or members are subject to tax in other states. So they get a credit for that. Financial institution credit, Nebraska personal exemption credit, again, that's a set amount, and as Bill noted, we do index that every year. Biodiesel, and then all the Nebraska incentive programs, Nebraska Advantage, things like that. Those are your non-refundable credits, and then refundable, there are some refundable credits under our incentive programs. There's also the child and dependent care credit, EITC, earned income tax credit, that's a huge, very important credit. Angel investment, and you finally get to the bottom line, which is the tax you owe or the amount of your refund that's coming back to you. You saw as I went through the federal part, some of the CBO estimates for tax expenditures. I put in here Nebraska's largest income tax expenditures, itemized deductions, standard deductions, the personal exemption credit, interest and dividends on U.S. obligations, which were heavily barred from taxing. non-Nebraska S-corp income or loss. If your income was earned in another state as a member of an S-corp, you pay tax in that state. If you have losses that are attributable to that state, you deduct them from that state, not in Nebraska. And then there's also a foreign federal or corporate amount, corporate issue there I'm not going to get into. Credit for tax paid to another state, earned income credit, net operating losses for business owners, and then our special capital gains dividend exclusion. Just those items are $861.2 million. That's from the 2012 Department of Revenue Expenditure Report. So that's kind of how you get to your base, or how we get to our base here in Nebraska for individual income tax. So now you have an idea of how we get there. Now let's talk about rates. Here are our brackets. We have four brackets in Nebraska. And you probably heard the phrase over and over again that Nebraska's income tax system is hyper-progressive. You can see that up there or on your handout. You will see one of the reasons why we're considered hyper-progressive. The very first bracket starts taxing that first dollar of income. So once you get to the point where you have Nebraska taxable income, you start paying on the first dollar of income, but you pay a lower rate. You pay 2.56% if you're single or married, filing joint, which are the two most common, up to a certain amount. So that first $4,800 or $2,400 gets taxed at the lower rate. Same thing as you move up in the brackets. Between $2,400 and $1,750, $4,800, $35,000 for married filing joint, you pay 3.57%, plus you pay a little bit additional tax there. And it keeps going that way until you get to, for married filing joint, $54,000 or above. Then all the income, all the excess over $54,000 gets taxed at that highest marginal rate, 6.84. Okay? So that when we talk in terms of, I talked about the hyper-progressivity, and when we talk about preferential rates, that's what we're talking about. You've got those three lower brackets where you've got a lower rate on those first thousands of dollars of income until you get to $54,000. And our highest rate kicks in fairly low. $54,000 married filing joint is fairly low. Another reason we get dinged is being hyper-progressive. These are just the numbers, the brackets for the married family separate household. Then we get to something that I discovered yesterday during our run through that is probably very little known in the state of Nebraska, but we have something known as the Nebraska additional tax. What happens here is that for pretty much any taxpayer, at 170, except for married filing separate, at 173,650 of AGI, adjusted gross income, we start to go back and make you recapture that preferential rate that you got in those lower brackets on the first 0 to 4,000 of income, 4,000 to 1,750, whatever that preferential rate was, we go back in and we recapture it. So that you lose the benefit of the preferential rate once your AGI gets over that amount. And then obviously by the time you get to 713,650 for married filing joint, you've recaptured all of the benefit of the preferential rate, and then all income from that point forward gets taxed at the 6.8%. Not commonly known apparently, or just something that gets missed from time to time, but it's important that you know about it. It does exist, and they do enforce it over at the department. That is Nebraska's individual income tax in a nutshell, and I hope it wasn't too confusing or there wasn't something you were hoping to hear that you didn't hear, but obviously it's a little bit. Write down questions and notes. We're always available to talk with you for your detail. Next, we're going to jump into corporate, and I'm going to try to go through this fairly quickly, and I may scare you to pain and torture discussing multi-state apportionment and the distinction between combined, consolidated, and separate reporting systems. But just like on the individual income tax side, Nebraska starts with federal. We start with federal taxable income rather than federal adjusted gross income. Federal Form 1120 at the end, it's Nebraska. I guess it's important to maybe say a couple of things at this point about legal entity selection for businesses. I know, again, there isn't enough time or inclination to go into great dissertation on this, but there are different legal entity structures that you may elect as a business owner or operator in this country. One is a, what we refer to as a traditional C corporation that is formed under Chapter C, Subchapter C of the Internal Revenue Code. You issue stock, you have articles of incorporation, you have bylaws, you have board of directors, and you may or may not be publicly traded, but you do issue shares in the company. Those are the only entities that pay the corporate tax, is C corporations. Unless you are an S corporation, which is a corporation formed under Subchapter S of the Internal Revenue Code, which is different from a C corporation. It has different requirements, different characteristics, and it is typically treated as a flow-through or a pass-through entity, meaning a C corporation, if they have excess cash, they give off dividends, right, to their shareholders. If you're an S corporation or any other type of flow-through or pass-through entity, you distribute all your income to your members or your shareholders. It gets distributed out. It's not retained at the entity level, and it's not taxed at the entity level. There's an option if you want, if you're an S-corp, and you want to be taxed as a C-corporation for some reason, you can check the box on the federal return and tax you like a C-corp. But for the most part, S-corporations and other flow-through entities issue accounts as a Schedule K-1. On the K-1, they identify their members, shareholders, partners, whatever term you want to use for the legal entity, and they show you the proportional distribution of income or loss based on that member's ownership share in the entity. So only C corporations file corporate returns in Nebraska. Everybody else distributes their income, and to the extent that income is Nebraska source income, the individual partners and shareholders, resident or non-resident, include that in their Nebraska taxable individual income. Federal definition of income for corporations: gross receipts for sales minus returns, allowances, cost of goods sold, dividends, interest, gross rents and royalties, capital gain or loss, other income comes in. What's excluded? The numbers you're seeing up here, by the way, are from the 2005 Nebraska Statistics of Information Report. It's the last time the Department of Revenue did the SOI report for corporate returns, for business returns. They have released a much more recent 2011 data, I believe, or 2010 was very individual, but these were the most recent numbers we had on statistics of income from Nebraska. So these are the things that get excluded. They never even go into the base of federal taxable income. This all comes out, and that's how much it costs us in Nebraska. I think for this year, for that year that's represented here in 2005, Nebraska's federal gross base for corporations was something like $38 billion, and after all the federal adjustments and Nebraska adjustments, it comes down to about $1.7 million. So it's pretty significant. You can see some of the other items in here. And that brings you down to your federal taxable income. Just those items I have listed there alone for Nebraska in 2005 represented $63 billion that came out of the base before we even get to reductions, Nebraska-specific reductions of credits. So Nebraska takes your corporate federal taxable income. You make you add back your net operating losses and your federal NOLs and your federal carryover and a couple other adjustments, because we let you deduct them back out later on. And you can see the other adjustments there, some foreign tax credits, income not subject to apportionment. As I told you, we're not going to get into apportionment today. We'll save that for subcommittee. There's a few other items that you can deduct out, and that gives you Nebraska adjusted federal taxable income. Then we allow you to take out your Nebraska NOLs and carryover losses, and that gets you down to your net Nebraska taxable income times rate, gives you your tax before credits. Here are your credits. Largest ones, of course, are going to be the Nebraska Advantage credits. Gets you to your net Nebraska tax, and just like on the individual side, we have four brackets on the individual side. We have two brackets on the corporate side. The first $100,000 of taxable income is taxed at the lower preferential rate, and then anything in excess of that is taxed at the higher rate. Multi-state, as I said, we're not going to get into a portion, and I don't think, which bill? I'll try to do this very quickly. If you are a business that conducts and has activities in more than one state such that you are subject to tax in another state besides Nebraska, then you must apportion your corporate income in Nebraska using a specified factor, which we refer to as single sales factor. That means you essentially take, and I have a slide here that I'll show you. If you're not taxable in another state, then all of your income has to be reported to Nebraska. You can't apportion it to the other state where your state is taxed. There are three different methods for doing apportionment. Used to be, in the good old days, everybody did three-factor, which was you took your property, payroll, and your sales, your gross receipts in the state. Use those two multiple factors that you apply to your income, your total income, and that's how much you got to tax in Nebraska. Nebraskans and 19 other states have now gone to what's known as single-factor sales. We don't care how much property you have in the state, we don't care how many employees you have in the state. All we want to know is what your sales or gross receipts were in the state. And then we divide that. Here's my formula. There's how you calculate, there's your columns. You put all of these things in for your everywhere sales or income and your Nebraska only income, and you'll get total receipts everywhere, total receipts in Nebraska. Then you divide your total Nebraska receipts by total everywhere receipts, and you come out with a fraction that has to be carried out to 3 decimal points. You multiply your income by that fraction. That gives you your net taxable income in Nebraska times your rate, gives you the tax due or refund. Combined versus separate reporting, suffice to say that for federal purposes, there's common ownership, meaning more than 50%. Generally speaking, all of the related or more than 50% owned subsidiaries or other legal entities within a large corporate group have to file what's known as a federal consolidated return. Any member of that federal consolidated return is presumed to be part of your quote-unquote unitary group in Nebraska, unless you can show that one of those members is so different and so distinct and so unrelated to all the other business activity that it should not be included in your combined return. Nebraska takes all the income, all the tax attributes of all of those members of your combined unitary group, and we lump them all together on one return, and that's how you do the calculation. Several states still utilize what's known as separate reporting, where each legal entity does its own separate return at the state level, even though they file a federal consolidated return. And what that can do is sometimes lead to manipulation and creation of what some people would refer to as nowhere income that ends up not being subject to tax in any state. 26 states, including Nebraska, now do some form of combined reporting, unitary, whatever you want to call it. 19 states are still doing separate reporting. But in 2010, I should say 2011, I missed that one, there were 12 states that at least introduced legislation to go to combined reporting because it is becoming a preferred method. As far as I know, none of them passed it, but you can see several of our neighbor states are looking at the concept of going to combined reporting. That is my presentation. Hopefully, is there, is there, are there